Welcome to This is Type 1, real-life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. I'm Colleen Mitchell, and I've had type 1 diabetes for 23 years. By day, I'm a process analyst in the power industry, and by night, I'm an author, blogger, and virtual assistant. I'm passionate about type 1 diabetes education and showing others that this disease doesn't define me.
I'm Jesse Tuggy, and I've had type 1 for 7 years. I love hiking and painting, and I'm looking forward to working as an engineer after college. My diagnosis has inspired me to take control of my future and learn everything I can about it.
Each week on the show, we'll talk about real life with type 1 diabetes, bring on cool people with connections to type 1, and above all, encourage you to understand that this disease doesn't have to hold you back. This isn't medical advice. This is life with type 1. Welcome to episode 10 of This is Type 1, real life type 1 diabetes with your hosts, Colleen and Jesse. Today, we're going to discuss how to lose weight as a type 1 diabetic and why it's so difficult. I'll be sharing my own weight loss story in more detail from last week. And just a note for everybody, I'm currently sick, so if I sound different, that's why. Before we dive into the episode, we need to share our wins, fails, and hack of the week. And I'm up this week for the win. So I had a work conference this past week, and I made sure to have backup diabetes supplies in my backpack, just in case. It was too far of a drive home to be comfortable foregoing some of that extra stuff with me, like my sight change or even a sensor change, so I brought all of that with me to the work conference.
Very nice, Colleen. I'm very proud of you.
Thank you.
So this week, I'm unfortunately up for the fail a week. But it's not necessarily like, no, it's necessarily a me fail. This is totally my fault. So my sensor died right before school happened, and I was already running quite late. I was 10 minutes late. I had to get changed for my zero period PE class. So when I left, I didn't leave and make sure that I had extra supplies with me that I needed. So instead of being prepared, like I always tell you guys to be, I was unprepared. Because when I had to test my blood sugar right after my PE class, I noticed there was only one strip left, and I had to test my blood sugar right after that. So I tested, and then I was out of strips for the rest of the day. So I was winging my blood sugar that whole day. So if I ate something, I only bolused for carbs. And then if I felt like I was going low, or if I was a little low, I had just a little something to keep my blood sugar up. So I was unprepared.
That is super winging it.
Yeah, I was old school for a day. It was very weird.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Well, you have our hack too this week, don't you?
I do. And this is kind of related to our fail, which is being prepared. So I recently started working at Coastal Farm and Ranch, which is a farm like warehouse and supply store. And we're not a hardware store. We also sell clothing and like feed, and we sell chickens. And it's a really great place. If you haven't heard of it or been to one, you should totally go and check it out just for fun. So when I go to work, we have a workroom just as most places do, but I don't always have access to it all the time because it's not around or near my station. So if you're a high schooler or someone who has like a job walking around and you have like a break room in your station, I highly recommend filling up like a fanny pack or a water bottle, or having a water bottle, excuse me, and putting those at your station, because those can be lifesavers sometimes. So for instance, if I'm walking around in my department, which is clothing right now, and I go low in the middle of like folding some clothes or checking on something, I can just grab a fruit snack, eat it really fast, and then put the wrapper back in a different pocket of the fanny pack, and then fill it up again and be on my way.
That is a great hack.
Yes, I highly recommend it for if you're a diabetic who's working a job with a lot of walking or something like that.
Or even like cargo pants with like those pockets. Just shove snacks everywhere.
Yes. Also, we sell cargo pants too.
Plug for Jesse's workplace.
Heck yeah. All right, so let's get into the bulk of the episode today. So today we're talking about losing weight and how hard it can be. So losing weight can be hard for everyone, but especially when it comes to being type 1 diabetic. For example, when you go running or jogging or on a treadmill and you go low. All of those fats, calories, and carbs that you lost are all of a sudden gone when you eat that small fruit snack or low carb correction to prevent or help your low go back up. But not all hope is lost. With proper diet and a balanced exercise regime, weight loss with diabetes can be achieved. So losing weight as a type 1 has more to do with foods that we eat and the amount of insulin that we use than it does anything else. Of course, there are other conditions that make it harder to lose weight, such as PCOS, thyroid problems, or even gluten issues. Though low carb usually avoids most gluten products anyways. That being said, both of us, Colleen and I, have noticed that on low carb has two main effects. We lose weight and our blood sugars get so much better.
Absolutely. So a funny side story, when I had a personal trainer a few years ago, as soon as I went low carb, just like stepping on the treadmill made my number drop. It was really funny.
That's your body trying to tell you something.
It kind of was. So these are some of the health benefits that I've noticed personally from losing weight. Lower blood sugars, a near normal A1C. My last one was 5.8%. Reduced insulin costs. I have more energy. I'm experiencing less fatigue and less apathy. I have more creative vision. I have practically no mental fog anymore. I feel better in my skin. My clothes fit better. And my self-esteem is higher. And I feel more confident, especially in professional settings.
And some of the things that I've noticed is I feel like I have more energy. I started to notice that I look different, like I'm starting to get more toned in certain areas. There's less, you know, jiggle when I dance or like when I move around. I look healthier. My skin is glowing more. Like you have this like certain health glow when you start to lose weight. I feel stronger. And that's really important to me because if you don't feel strong enough to take on your day, then you need to either fix something or go out and handle something that you don't want to handle. So with that, exercising and losing weight actually makes you want to go outside and do different things and change the way that you're living your lifestyle, which I always thought was awesome. And then you start to enjoy activities that you used to hate. Like, for instance, I used to hate running, and then all of a sudden I joined the cross country team and I had so much fun. Even though I have lows a lot during practices and meets, I took care of it, and then I was doing the running and our exercise and I was loving every minute of it. And then when losing weight, you find all of these cool activities that are overall exciting and fun, which in turn makes you meet new and different people. Like, I never would have met half of my friends if I didn't go out and exercise either at the gym or, you know, color guard or practice or teams or whatever.
There's definitely something to be said for finding an exercise buddy.
Oh, yeah. They push you to your limits and make sure that you're actually going those extra steps to better yourself.
So as we've said, losing weight as a type 1 diabetic is extremely difficult. And as of this recording, I've actually lost about 55 pounds from my highest weight. And that journey has taught me a few things that we'll unpack in this episode. First, carbs made me fat. Second, insulin kept me fat. Third, for practically everyone, weight loss happens in the kitchen, not the gym. And fourth, losing weight affects your physicality, emotions, mental health, and your finances. So first, I want to dive into the backstory. I first noticed that I was overweight when I was in the fourth grade. At some point during a math class, I realized that I had a lot of fat around my middle, and that realization has stayed with me ever since. It never really occurred to me that this was a direct result of having type 1 diabetes. So I sort of drifted through elementary, junior high, and part of high school, not really knowing what to do about it, and so I did nothing. Unfortunately, my parents didn't really know how to help, and so anything they did do or say ended up discouraging me even more. I'd hear things like, you need to lose weight, and I'd end up so frustrated because, yeah, I knew that, but nobody ever told me how, not even my doctors. And in the latter half of high school, which for me was Running Start, which is a program where juniors and seniors take college classes instead of or in addition to regular high school classes. For those years and into college, I was in PE classes. I swam. I was doing all sorts of exercise. I tried to eat healthy, quote unquote. But all I experienced was this roller coaster of blood sugars and, if anything, weight gain.
So for me, since I'm still, you know, in high school and still young and stuff, I haven't really experienced all of what Colleen has. But when I was first diagnosed with diabetes, I was really tiny. I weighed about 80 pounds and I was in the third grade. Then I was diagnosed and all of a sudden I felt like I had gained a million pounds and I didn't know why I felt so bad. Until one day I looked in the mirror and saw my figure. I had grown, and my parents have told me, you know, you grow in different ways and, you know, puberty hits you differently and all that stuff. But to me, it hadn't really felt like puberty. It felt like something was actually wrong. I looked different from the kids around me, and that really kind of freaked me out. And that lasted up until about halfway through middle school when I started to realize that the only difference between me and them was that I was type 1 diabetic. So from there on, I tried my best to eat healthier and exercise more, even though after trial and error, exercising doesn't always mean weight loss.
So on to the first thing that I learned, carbs made me fat. I talked about how I grew up with the quote unquote, you need carbs to live spiel in last week's episode. To recap, I was afraid that if I stopped eating carbohydrates, I'd die. And Jesse shared this. In reality, the more carbs I ate, the worse my blood sugars were, and the worse I felt. My diet in high school and college was filled with carb-heavy foods. Most of my lunches were taquitos and Hot Pockets, and my dinners were an entire box of pastaroni or homemade flour tortillas. It was bad. But I'd also obsessively research weight loss, and I spent hours on the internet just scouring websites trying to understand why I couldn't lose weight. I signed up for tracking sites like MyFitnessPal and Lose It. I still actually use Lose It today, just less frequently. I tried those weird green tea extract pills and even Similin, which is this injected synthetic amylin, which is the hormone that controls hunger. And I used that to reduce my appetite, but none of it worked. And I kept spiraling down into that pit of despair that nothing would ever work. So after I graduated from college and I was still having problems, my doctor had me get a book by Dr. Mark Hyman called The 10-Day Detox Diet. She had originally kept telling me that the problem was stress, which made sense, but I transitioned from school stress to work stress, and the end result was the same. So this was about in September of 2015. This diet took out pretty much everything that tastes good in life, and I'm not kidding. I say that looking back on those 10 days and only remembering really tasteless food and curling up on the couch to sleep as soon as I got home from work. I was so tired, so apathetic, so fatigued, but I lost 10 pounds in those 10 days. Tim, my husband, was worried about me during this time because I didn't want to do anything at all after I got home. I'd just go to the couch and fall asleep. And then I'd wake up and go fall back asleep in bed. So I knew I could lose weight, but that diet was so unsustainable and I had no interest in trying to deal with the slow reintroduction of food to find out what I reacted to or not. It was kind of like a less fun Whole30 program. And I told my doc that I was never trying it again. I probably didn't do it right. I probably didn't properly season the things I could eat and I could have gotten more variety than plain chicken breast or whatever. One thing I do remember is that it had these really complicated smoothie recipes that tasted pretty meh on a scale of yuck to mmm. The prep time for the recipes was frustrating because the end result was so bland and just unsatisfying. And there were a lot of recipes that made a ton of food that we just didn't use and we ended up wasting a lot. Anyway, despite the 10-pound loss, I swung right back up and I eventually hit my high of 225 pounds on January 9th, 2016. 2 days later, I experienced 3 really extreme blood sugar crashes over the course of 8 hours, and the last of those took over 300 carbs to pull me out.
And then for me, one of the things that I realized slowly after I started losing weight was that I was eating less. And I noticed that because I didn't want to eat. I didn't want to have this bloated feeling with me anymore. I didn't want to feel this constant need to impress people with my personality because I didn't look the same as everybody else. So instead of doing something healthy or something doctor recommended, I did my own thing. I started going to the gym. I started running more. I ate only salads and eggs, no carbs whatsoever. And I limited myself on how much I could eat and when I could eat. But I realized soon and shortly after that that wasn't sustainable, that I couldn't keep up my energy and that I couldn't be happy or healthy that way if I continued like that. So I finally quit and I went back on some carbs and reintroduced some things that made me happy as a kid. You know, like once a week I'll eat pasta or, you know, something a little more carby. But I still kept up those good habits of not eating as many carbs and limiting how much food I could eat. But then I had a doctor's appointment coming up. And I know I had lost weight because I measured myself about once a week for about 3 months. Because at my high of 185, I was not happy. So when the doctors told me that I had lost about 20 pounds in 3 months, it both surprised and shocked me. I knew I was doing something right. But I also knew I was doing something wrong because I didn't feel good.
So you didn't feel good? Can you expand on that?
So I felt fatigued. I felt really tired all the time. I'd start yelling at my brother. I would have this certain like brain fog around like my homework that 2 weeks before was really easy. So I wasn't getting something that I needed, like probably some vitamin or nutrients that I cut out just flat out.
Yeah, you're probably low on like sodium and magnesium and all of the nice micronutrients.
Right. And later we put me on magnesium supplements and I felt a lot better and I could still lose weight.
Okay. On to the second thing that I learned. Insulin kept me fat. So it didn't really click for me until much later that the driving force behind everything was the insulin. When I carb loaded, I needed a ton of insulin to bring down my blood sugars, inciting that vicious cycle of roller coasters. So you'd go down, then you'd go up, and then because you'd over bolus, you'd go down, and then you'd eat so many carbs and come back up. So between the time of that 10-day detox diet and January 9th, I stumbled across a Reddit sub for keto, and we'll link to it in the show notes. Like many previous times, I just obsessively researched what it was, how it worked, and I read stories from other type 1 diabetics who had experienced success with this. You can hear more about the keto/low-carb diet in episode 9 on why the food we eat matters a lot. That night on January 11th, 2016, I went to bed resolved to eat an entire day of low-carb/keto when I woke up in the morning. And since I used Lose It heavily back then, I have a record of what I actually ate. On January 11th, I ate 364 carbs. On January 12th, I ate only 93, but 21 of those were fiber, so my net total was around 72. And 40 of those were from 2 cans of apple juice because I did experience some lows since I hadn't adjusted my insulin rates yet. But still, at that point, it was like the best day my blood sugars had ever had. And the day after that, I only had 29 net carbs. So I noticed something interesting happening. As I lowered my carb intake, I also lowered my insulin intake. I actually halved my insulin. And when that happened, my weight started coming off almost like magic. It wasn't particularly fast or impressive, but it happened almost without effort, whereas before I'd been exerting so much effort with personal training and exercise with no weight loss results at all.
Oh, I just wanted to add that you taught me everything I know.
Aww. So,
basically, Colleen and I met at diabetic camp, which I hope you guys know by now because we did mention it in episode 1. And if you haven't heard episode 1, you should go listen to that. So we met at diabetic camp and... So I hadn't known a lot about carbs when I first went, but now that I've gone a couple of years, I know a lot more than I did. And I know the difference between good carbs and bad carbs. Like good carbs are like some that are in fruits and vegetables, but mostly I try and stay away from carbs. Anyways, Colleen taught me everything I know, and she's right about everything that she taught me. Like from going low carb to feeling better to like, you know, anything you can imagine. She's right about almost anything.
Well, thank you.
I should be thanking you.
Aw. Anyway, so on to the third thing that I noticed. Weight loss happens in the kitchen, not the gym. So I also noticed that when I weighed myself every day, I had a better picture of how things were going, even if there was a variance of a pound or more in water weight. I actually looked back through those food logs for those first few months, and I remembered that I hadn't figured out how to do keto on ski days, and those days were really heavily carb-loaded with McDonald's breakfasts and a lot of low snacks. I favored Rice Krispie treats back then. And now that I think about it, White Pass has this really big Rice Krispie treat that they always have in the lodge, and it's honestly amazing. But, you know, I can't have that anymore. But nowadays, I barely need any low snacks while skiing, which is amazing. So that first year on low carb got me down to about 200 pounds. And I hovered there for a long time, and then I started creeping back up when faced with the stress of losing my job and moving in with my in-laws for what would be 6 months of unemployment. Staying low carb during that period was pretty difficult. And then on December 3rd, 2017, which was a few months after I'd gotten my job, I got my head back into the game and I steadily started losing weight again, going from about 210 pounds down to where I am now, which is around 172. So for me, low carb is not difficult or tasteless or depriving. And it's actually kind of funny to me how much people cling to their carb heavy foods because they think they'll be deprived and they can't seem to wrap their heads around the idea that I feel completely satisfied with what I eat. I really don't have any desire to partake in the donuts and the accounting goodies at work. I mean, I eat bacon every day at work, and it's also funny how many people say things like, "You're the one making kitchen smell amazing every day." That one makes me laugh a lot. I really wish I'd known a long time ago that weight loss happens in the kitchen and not the gym. I lost the bulk of this 55 pounds without any exercise at all. In fact, when I did the Couch to 5K program, I stopped losing fat and I stalled my weight loss, and it was really annoying. And despite eating low carb, that exercise intensity stalled me out. And now the last section of things that I realized. Losing weight affects a lot more than just your weight. I hope that this can actually serve as encouragement for you as our listeners in case you're a type 1 diabetic struggling to lose weight and wondering why you should even bother. So obviously the most obvious benefit of weight loss is the weight loss itself. It's easier to bend over to put on shoes. It's easier to go on a walk around the park without losing your breath. It's easier to feel good about the body you're in instead of wishing for a skinnier version. And like I said before, the taste and smell of sugar now put me off. Like those donuts, those fried high-carb foods, cake, pastries, all of that, it all honestly smells a little gross to me now. And if I have a roll or two of Smarties in the middle of the night for a low, my mouth feels and tastes kind of gross when I wake up. And if I've had something that's breaded and fried like mozzarella sticks, I honestly can't get past the taste of the fried breading. All taste of the thing underneath is just lost to that overpowering taste of carb in my mouth. And when people bring those boxes of donuts into the kitchen, I can smell the sugar as soon as I walk in. It's honestly amazing how sensitive I am now to the taste of carbs, even if I need a roll of Smarties to boost my blood sugar. When people, especially diabetics, are overweight, it's a strain on the wallet. So financial. Weight-related health issues cost money, mental health, time, and energy. Diabetics with higher weights use more insulin, and that's one of the most expensive substances in the world. We've all heard about, you know, the insulin price controversies and stuff, which is honestly atrocious. And since I have been at an obese BMI, I know firsthand how mentally and physically debilitating it was to carry all that extra weight around. I felt terrible. I hated how I looked. I avoided having pictures taken. I dressed in unflattering clothes, and I often went into those obsessive spirals looking for ways to lose weight without resorting to diabulimia, because I knew, even back then, that I would not sacrifice my blood sugars to reduce my weight. I knew it could kill me, and I already hated the feeling of high blood sugar, so I was unwilling to even try that. I keep making it sound like switching to low carb was a magic cure, but it kind of was. So for me, my path forward, I still have weight to lose. I have never actually been at a healthy weight as an adult. I don't know what the number on the scale will say or what my body measurements will be. For my height and my bone structure, it could be around 140 or 150 pounds, which is, from here, another 20 to 30 pounds to lose. But after losing 55, that feels achievable. And because I already know I can do it, I feel better about what's next. I just hope that my experiences and Jesse's can help other overweight or obese type 1 and even type 2 diabetics start their own weight loss journeys if they've been trying and failing like I did. Any last words for us, Jesse?
I would just say don't get frustrated with your body. Your body is a temple, and this is losing weight is part of a healing process for your body. You should be feeling good. And if you have that extra like water weight one day and the scale goes up 1 or 2 pounds, that's just your body's way of recovering. So you can't feel frustrated with that, no matter how discouraged it may seem.
That's a really good point. For me, weighing every day actually helps me feel more on track, but I know a lot of people get caught up in the number. And if that's you, then you shouldn't weigh every day. You should pick one day a week, and you weigh yourself in the morning after you've gone to the bathroom, before you shower, eat anything, no clothes, because clothes weigh stuff, and that's the most accurate you can get with weight. And if you keep it consistent every week, then the trend is more important than the day-to-day variations.
Right, and just keep track of it. I mean, you don't see the changes until you write them down and you know what they are.
or if you have your driver's license picture taken like 6 years later, because that's the biggest difference I've ever seen in my face.
That's true.
And another thing is that the number on the scale could also not be a great measurement because it doesn't differentiate between muscle and fat, and muscle weighs more than fat. So a more accurate way of tracking progress is to measure yourself at your waist, your hips, your bust, your arms, and your legs.
Also, don't always pay attention to the BMI. Just because it says you're obese, there is muscle. So again, it doesn't differentiate between the two.
The BMI is trash, just saying.
Yeah, don't. Ugh, I hate the BMI. I hate it. Don't go.
All the doctors. My doctor hates the BMI.
All doctors hate the BMI.
I know. So why does it even exist anymore?
I don't know why we still. It's probably to teach kids about, you know, oh, you should be healthy. This is not the way to be healthy. Our public education system is not teaching us how to be healthy. It's just telling us to eat the foods that they provide us and say that we're being healthy, and then give us foods that make us fat, and then all of a sudden we're obese and our country as a whole is obese and we don't have healthy eating habits.
Tell us again, Jesse, what you're forced to eat at school.
Oh, they serve us pizzas, breadsticks, and they don't even taste good. Tortillas, high fat, carb, and soda products that, you know.
They actually feed you soda?
Oh, they sell it.
Oh, well, yeah. Oh, still.
And then they sell Red Bulls, and they actually had today for a school project for our DECA class. And if you don't know what DECA is, it's basically a business class where they sold Red Bull Italian sodas at school.
They actually sold Red Bull Italian sodas. That's just insane.
Yes. And they made money from it.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. And if people wonder why Americans are so fat, well, look at what you eat.
That is why.
So, problems with our government, BMI, and public feeding systems. Okay, after that little rant, we have our next segment, diabetes in the news. So, new Center to Research Stem Cell Cures for Type 1 Diabetes is our title. And I quote, JDRF has just announced a new partnership with Stanford and the University of California, San Francisco to create the JDRF Northern California Center of Excellence. The goal of the center is to research and develop cures for type 1 diabetes that use stem cells to produce insulin. Stem cells are cells that have the potential to develop into many different types of cells in the human body, like producing insulin beta cells in the pancreas. More specifically, the partnership aims to develop a stem cell-based cure for type 1 diabetes that does not require the suppression of the immune system, immunosuppression, by the way. Sometimes the immune system must be shut down so that it does not fight against a potential helpful but new group of cells, like a new kidney after a kidney transplant, or new stem cells. The JDRF partnership with Stanford and UCSF will focus on understanding the relationship between the immune system and the pancreas to create stem cell-based cures for type 1 diabetes that do not require immunosuppression.
And that's from Diatribe. And that's pretty cool. So another step closer to a cure.
Even though that they tell you it's been one step closer to a cure for the last 5 years. But this is an actual step, so woohoo!
All right, so we have our first listener question. Jesse, would you like to read for us?
Heck yeah. Awesome. So our first listener question is from Angie. Thank you, Angie. So she wants to know if we have any tip for dealing with sick days as a type 1 diabetic. Colleen.
Yeah, so as an adult, I don't really get sick all that often, but as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, I currently am sick. But when I do, it's after I've been exposed to a lot of people, like at the Highland Games, which is the last time, or a work conference, which is this time. And I only usually get head colds or like a cough, so I don't think I've had the flu for a long time. So on top of all the regular advice for getting over a sickness, it's important to realize that when your body's sick, it's going to take more insulin to achieve the same blood sugars. The stress from the sickness releases cortisol, and cortisol increases insulin resistance a bit. And because of that, it might be a good idea to do a temporary basal increase if you're on a pump, or possibly up your long-acting dose if you're on injections. Just make sure you clarify this with your doctor first, and make sure you keep an eye on your number in case you don't eat as much as normal, because dealing with a low blood sugar when you're sick is not as fun if you feel too nauseated to eat anything. Also, make sure you stay hydrated. And I asked my mom for what she did when I was a kid, and she would put me on something she called the brat diet, which was pretty bland. It was banana, rice, applesauce, and toast. And that was basically all I had. And looking back on that, it's like, that is so carb heavy that I couldn't eat that anymore today. So when I'm sick now, I just kind of eat normally. So also when you're sick, it's important to test for ketones if your blood sugar stays over 250 for, I think it's more than 2 hours. And while I know it's super annoying, avoid stacking that insulin to force it down, because going below 50 is a biological low blood sugar. And your liver will probably exhaust itself of glycogen, which is the thing that turns into glucose when the pancreas releases glucagon in response to a low. So my appetite is usually decreased when I'm sick, regardless of what I'm sick with, but I try to stick with my normal foods. And I also add in a lot of extra tea and maybe some hot broth to help with a sore throat. And just last week at that work conference, I had a bit of an upset stomach, and that was probably, you know, a bit of foreshadowing there. But I found that if I sipped on a sparkling water, it really helped with the nausea. And the last time that I was like really, really sick, it was a 24-hour bug that I picked up at a sandwich shop somewhere in Scotland in 2014. And I didn't have a CGM at the time, so I had to make sure I was checking my blood sugar whenever I woke up, kept drinking water, but avoiding food. And I don't really remember what my blood sugars were like, but the bug only lasted about a day. So, yep. Jesse, do you have any tips?
Yes, I do. Stay hydrated, as Colleen said earlier. Also, another pro tip is if you're staying home from school or from work one day and you know you don't want to get up, make sure you have a table or a bin sitting nearby of everything you think you might need, from strips to snacks to ketone strips when you have to go to the bathroom, to water, to extra insulin or change out site. Make sure you just have that around and with you, because you're not going to want to get up. And you're also going to feel, you know, when you're sick, you have this head fog around you and you don't feel good. So you're not going to want to do anything. So definitely have those things with you is the best advice that I can give. If you're feeling nauseous and you think you might, you know, get sick or something, make sure you're always testing. Even if you're low or your blood sugar is 100 and you throw up, test your ketones right away and call your doctor immediately, because that's not good, because your blood sugar will be fine, but you'll have ketones. So you actually might have to go to the hospital if you throw up and you have ketones. They might tell you to go in. Or if you don't throw up and you're testing and you have ketones and your blood sugar is fine, that's a problem right there.
So I kind of have a funny story about what you were just talking about. Whenever I went, maybe not every time, but more frequently than seems reasonable, whenever I went over to Alexa's house, when I used to stay at my parents' house, for some reason, I would just always go low. There was no reason to always go low, but I always went low. And at one point, I went so low, I was like 50 something, and I would not come up, and I don't know why. And I had ketones, and I was like, crap, I can't give insulin to bring these ketones down because I'm already low and insulin would be a bad idea. But we couldn't figure out why I was low with ketones, and I was like sick and throwing up. And oh yeah, that bin of supplies that you're keeping next to your bedside table, make sure it's a different bin from the one you're going to throw up in. Just saying.
Oh, heck yeah. You do not want to throw up all over your insulin stuff and your diabetic supplies. That'd be gross. And then you have to deal with it until you clean it. Ew.
Ew, indeed. So now it is time for our question for the audience. And this one is kind of personal, so please only share if you're comfortable. Have you lost weight as a diabetic or not? And what did you do to achieve that? Do you have any tips for your fellow listeners?
All right. And then before we go, I just want to let you guys know that I actually have to take a short break from recording the show for a little while. It's just some personal stuff that happened with my family, and I just need to focus on them right now. But do not stress too much, because I'll be back before you even realize I'm gone.
And that is it for this episode of This is Type 1. You can find the show notes at inspiredforward.com/episode10. And if you have an idea for an upcoming episode, please leave us a comment or send an email. You can get straight to our podcast page by going to thisistype1.com. And if you are feeling interested, please join our Patreon at patreon.com/thisistype1. Our music is by Joseph McDade, and our audio wizard is my husband, Tim. I'm on all social media as at Inspired Forward, and our email is colleen@inspiredforward.com.
And I'm on Instagram as at JJ_CrystalKAT. Please feel free to send me questions or comments, even though I'm taking a break, about type 1 diabetes or about the show. Go for it.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, please share it with your friends. And please leave us a rating or review on iTunes/Apple Podcasts, since that helps other people find us. It really, really does. And be sure to listen in next week when we, or I guess maybe me, talk about air travel with type 1 diabetes. Remember, you control your diabetes. It doesn't control you. Hey, if you like what you're listening to on this podcast, you have to join us in the Half Dead Pancreas Club. It's my private community where you'll connect face to face with other people with type 1 diabetes, get personalized emotional support, and learn how to handle anything T1D throws at you. Join us over at inspiredforward.com/community. I can't wait to see you there.